Jesus won me over, not a certain type of service. He is still winning me over every single day, and not the style of church that I go to.
Hi, I'm Carl Vaders, and welcome to The Church Lobby, Conversations on Faith and Ministry. My guest today is Thomas Austin, and we'll be talking about what happens when normal churches try to follow the megachurch model at the cost of being who they really are. Our conversation is based on the content of Thomas's song, Normal Church, which is beautifully written both musically and lyrically, but of course our conversation will focus on the lyrics. In it, a fictional narrator decides to attend church even though, quote, "I hardly ever do this, but I thought I'd like to go," close quote. And what he finds is, quote, "a normal church, trying its best to be a megachurch, but all that seemed to do was make it worse," leading him to ask, what's wrong with being just a normal church? This is a fun, important conversation that touches on so many points, including what can go wrong when we try to be something we're not, what many younger people are looking for in church, and a whole lot more. We'll play the song for you at the start of our conversation, then we'll talk about many of the important themes it touches on. And don't forget to stick around when the interview is done. I'll come back with my short take on how we as Christians can do a better job at critiquing ourselves and hearing valid criticism without turning every difference of opinion into a holy war. Well, Thomas Austin, welcome to the Church Lobby. It's good to have you here.
Yeah, good to be here. Thanks for having me.
So I became aware of you and the song we're going to talk about today because one of my listeners sent it to me and said, it seems like this guy might have been in one of your conference talks because so much of the lyrics of your song, Normal Church, sounded like a whole bunch of what this ministry is about and of the kinds of things that I'm always harping on small church pastors about. We'll play the song for everybody soon, but before we actually do, give me an idea. Your song is called Normal Church.
Yep.
How did you come to write it?
The story is honestly a little bit different than maybe what people expected. So I just wrote it for a friend. I have a friend who kind of got burnt by a mega church. He wasn't a Christian until about the middle of high school, and then he started to go to a church in town, like a mega church. And that was his first experience of church. And it was very much like the parable of the sower, kind of shallow ground. And he just felt like very burnt by that church. So he's like one of my best friends here in Nashville. And we were just talking about his experience. And we've just talked about his experience a ton since I've been friends with him. And yeah, so one day, I forget if it was after one of those conversations or not, but I just sat down and I just thought it would be funny to like list all the tropes of a mega church in a row in a song. And I just sent it to him. And that's where it lived for a year. I normally send every song I write to my brother. I play it for my wife, but this one I didn't. I just sent it to my friend and it sat there for a year until I posted on Instagram like a year later.
Okay. Well, since our listeners probably haven't heard it, let's play it for them so they get to hear, and then we'll come back and we're going to talk through the lyrics because what you just described is what's in it. It has all of the megachurch tropes in it. It's a very soft sounding song, but it's got some real edge to the lyrics. Yeah, it's got some bite and it's got some humor to it. So anyway, let's go ahead and play that for everybody and then we'll come back and talk about it.
Well, I walked in on Sunday and I sat down in a row. I hardly ever do this, but I thought I'd like to go. And everywhere around me, folks were pulling out their phones and turning to the screens to scan a giant QR code. It was a normal church, trying its best to be a mega church. But all that seemed to do was make it worse. What's wrong with being just a normal church? And there was a countdown to the service, and the band started to play. And it felt just like a concert if the concert wasn't great. But they've got 200 people clapping almost on the beat, thanks to a drummer in a cage about the size of Mozambique. And the preacher started preaching, and it started with a joke. You could tell where it was going from the moment that he spoke. And for for an hour he was talking, till he suddenly got loud, before he closed things with a whispered invitation to the crowd. It was a normal church, trying its best to be a mega church. Why can't the worship band wear normal shirts? What's wrong with being just a normal church? Well, you can see that it is written on the website mission page, in the prayer requests and Sunday best and hazers by the stage, in all of the theology that's stacked up on the shelves. We're all bound for something so much better than ourselves. We are a normal church, trying our best to be a mega church. We sign our emails with a Bible verse. We're tithing 10% to concert merch. We raise our hands and hardly know the words, then close our eyes and hope our prayer gets heard. We've got a building and a lot to learn about what it means to be a normal church.
All right, so that's the song Normal Church. And for those of you who are hearing it for the first time, you probably had a similar feeling to when I heard it for the first time, where the lyric has got more bite than the music would hint at. It all works beautifully together. But yeah, it's got some real bite to it. So let me start by, before we get into the specifics of the lyric, what do you consider a normal, when you use the word normal church, just like, you know, my ministry, Helping Small Churches Thrive, I've always got to define what I mean by the word small. So I'm going to make you define what you mean by the term normal church.
Man, you know, a lot of people have asked me to define normal. I feel like that was the main comment I got. And maybe want to preface this by saying, I think it's fascinating that there's this tendency, like a lot of kind of strands of Christianity these days have inherited this tendency to like define their terms and be very careful about the arguments that they make. And I don't know what to say about that other than that it's fascinating to me, because there are a lot of, like, in a lot of ways, we use a lot of Christian jargon without having to define our terms at all. But the second that we feel like we are attacked in some way, or like that somebody's making a critique of us, then suddenly it's time to define terms and get very careful about what we say. So that was just fascinating to me as I was kind of dealing with like the backlash of releasing the song, was that that was the main question I would get asked, is, can you define normal? And I never did. I just explicitly avoided defining normal. But I will for you, Carl, because you have such a kind face. I think that there is this, from the churches that I have been a part of and visited, there's almost a trend in a lot of American Christianity, and I hesitate to use any blanket terms. I want listeners to kind of understand that, because every church is different. But there's a trend to like see what's really working with the churches that are like successful on the internet and take those things and like shoehorn them into what works for your church. And I guess how I want to define a normal church is just like a church that relies, or every church is a normal church because every church is made up of normal people. And what I wish churches would do to kind of lean into their normalcy is to lean into the gifts of their congregation. In the context of the song, most churches do not have the mega church budget. Most churches do not have the mega church excellency at musicians or speakers or things like that. But the internet has kind of pressed upon them this feeling as if they're not successful unless they do those things. So I don't know if I can really define normal church other than every church is a normal church until it tries to be something that is not in the DNA of its parishioners, if that makes sense.
I absolutely could not have defined it better than that. I fully agree with you. Again, as a ministry that works with small churches, which means an awful lot of time rural churches as well, especially when you go to smaller towns, there is much more distinct DNA than you have even in big cities and certainly in bigger churches. When you get into smaller groups of people, the distinctives start to come to the front. When you get into larger crowds, the commonalities are what comes out.
Yeah,
is what I've noticed. And so in a smaller church, like you say, and your refusal to define it for others and your kindness in giving us a definition today makes sense because, like you said, there is no real single normal thing. But I love the way you define it. You didn't use the word organically, but I will. That it comes organically from the context in which you are worshiping and the people who are in the room rather than something that's being forced upon it from the outside.
Yeah, for sure. I think a lot of the tropes that I kind of, for lack of a better term, make fun of in the song are the ones that, and I mean that in like the true sense of make fun of. Like, I think they are fun and funny and not necessarily bad, but I pull those tropes, and I think a lot of those tropes are normal if you go to a massive church. It's just, what is the average? You might have a better idea of this than I do. You probably do. I heard somewhere recently that the average church size in America is something like 70 people. It just seems crazy to me that, just speaking from a musician standpoint, like drum cages and massive sound systems and like wall treatment, things like that are not necessary for 70 people. You know, I've played house shows with no sound system to 70 people. Yeah, I think I agree with you. I wish that there wasn't this tendency to just like go big or go home when most churches just don't need to be that way.
I hear you. Now, you mentioned in your approach of you haven't normally defined it to others because when and people you say that have given you pushback. So you've gotten some pushback from this?
Yeah, so I posted the song on Instagram last summer. I posted it a random Sunday morning, which I guess turned out to have been the perfect time to post the song because people were in church. It was fresh in their minds. But then I went to my god brother's baseball game, and then I came home and checked Instagram, and it was already kind of starting to do its thing. And then by like middle of the next week, it had gotten like 200, 300,000 views on Instagram. And like, I'm a tiny artist. Like, if you're listening to this podcast, you probably do not know who I am. It's like very likely you don't know who I am. And I kind of like it that way. Like, I love playing, I write small songs for small crowds, and I feel like that is the vocation that has been placed on me. But so this just reached a way bigger crowd way faster than I meant for it to. It got some like 300 comments in that same time. And most of the comments were kind and encouraging, and like people who like heard the song and like you resonated with it and felt like it had something new to add to a conversation that frankly is a little bit like an old conversation to me. Like, I haven't gone to the kind of church I describe in the song for a long time. I go to an Anglican church now, and it's helped me a lot. I haven't loved church more in my life than right now. So the pushback was largely, I don't know how specific you want me to get. It was largely white men in their 40s, a lot of reformed, seemingly, from what I could tell. A lot of asking me to define normal church, and then a lot of people who were like defending that style of church in a way that I wanted to comment. And I also never responded to anybody. I kind of made that rule for myself right away to never
Yeah,
respond.
you and me both.
But a lot of the comments were kind of just asking, not even not asking, angrily insisting that I was a church hater, that I was tearing down the body. In my mind, I was just thinking, well, the church is going to be fine and God's going to be fine. Like, I don't think that, you know, I couldn't, t I think I said something in an essay somewhere where I said I couldn't so much as ruffle the hairs on the church's head, let alone tear it down, tear her down. So I wasn't super worried about that. And I, like, again, I really do love church. And I had a friend of mine when I asked, so kind of timeline things, I posted that reel. I hadn't even recorded the song. I actually hadn't finished writing it. I just wrote two verses, and then it sat for a year. I posted that reel, and then it got big. So I was like, oh, I'd better record this, which means I better finish it. So I asked my friend, a writer by the name of Andy Gullihorn, who's also a singer-songwriter, writes amazing songs, but he's older than me, and he's a lot funnier and a lot more experienced. He has a lot of experience making fun of the things that he loves. And I asked him, I was like, should I release this song? And he said, what is your main worry? And I said, I don't want to be labeled as a church hater. And he said, well, the best way to not get labeled as a church hater is to go to church and love it and let the rest of the chips fall where they may. And
There you
so
go.
I was like, I do go to church and I do love it. So I'm not really worried about how people receive it. It does bother me that some people don't receive it, you know, in a way that is charitable to me. But that's kind of the price you pay when you make any kind of art. That people might not like it. And Christians in general, it's weird with Christian music because any sort of creative endeavor as a Christian You're not just saying like, oh, I think this is the case. There's this like weird subliminal, like, oh, I also happen to think that God thinks that this is honoring and good. And that is like, that's a sacred cow in a lot of people's lives that like they don't know how to deal with opinions in the church space because anything having to do with God has this flavor of objectivity to it. Whereas just anything else would, you could take it as subjective. You could be like, I just don't like this art. But people are like, I don't like this art because I think that it is tearing down God. That was a strange place for me to be as somebody who loves God and loves church.
Yeah, I wish I could say that surprises me, but it doesn't. It saddens me, but it's not all that unexpected because none of the criticisms you're describing are in the song. This is not a criticism of the church. It's not even a criticism of the mega church or of the normal sized church. It's a criticism of trying to shoehorn something into a place where it doesn't belong. I hear a great love for the church and for churches of all types and sizes there, and an appeal to, hey, just be who you are in this, rather than a criticism of any type or style or size, and certainly not a criticism of the church in general at all. I don't hear that in the song whatsoever.
Oh, thank you. I'm glad.
Yeah. So, and anyway, yeah, I wish I could say that surprised me that people felt that way, but no, I've experienced the same thing. All of us who have tried to do things that are not straight down the middle of particular theological schools know what it's like to face the criticism from someone who's from a particular theological school. And I guess any, like you say, a lot of it I think does come from this idea that there's an expectation that when you're in, as you say, the God space, when you express an opinion, they hear it as you saying, "Thus saith the Lord," when all it is you're going, "This is just my opinion about how I think this thing is."
Totally.
And I definitely see that as so. Let's get into the lyrics of it because it really is very well written. So you and your friend, who was the lyricist to help you with it
I
again?
wrote the song by myself. It was just my friend and
Oh,
I just
okay,
had a conversation about this.
got it. I'm glad to clarify that too, because yeah, I want to be sure that we give credit to everyone. So this is yours. So you had someone who kind of walked you through some of the thoughts of this, but the lyrics are all yours. Okay. So you take the standpoint of someone who hasn't been to church in a while, because the third or fourth lines are, "I hardly ever go, hardly ever do this, but I thought I'd like to go." And the first thing that they see is people pulling out their phones to scan the QR code. Now, as someone who serves a small church that uses QR codes, let me tell you how offended I am by this.
That was another thing. A lot of people were like, why, what do you have against QR codes? That was just a hilarious critique of the song to me. And
I
it cracks
know.
me up.
As soon as I heard it, it made me chuckle because to me, it's a visual that you get like before even the worship starts, and maybe you've got the rotating slides of events coming up, and almost all of them will have a QR code. And especially given the personality of the person who is narrating the song, not you, but the person whose character you're playing in the song, who hasn't been to church in a while. And if somebody hasn't been to church in a generation and they show up and all of a sudden there's QR codes everywhere. I mean, on the back of every one of the seats in our congregation, there's a QR code because that's what you scan to go to the bulletin, to get the highlights, to understand, to give, to do whatever you want to do. That's how people do it. But if you haven't been in church in a while and you walk in, that's probably one of the first things that's going to strike you as different from the last time you went to church.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, so I didn't see it as a criticism necessarily, just but as a, okay, I'm brand new here and okay, this is different to me. I didn't even see it as a criticism of QR codes, but just as something that would strike a first time in a long time church attender.
Yeah, I thought of it as the same. You know, like there's this thing now where you can't even go to a restaurant and get a real menu a lot of times. Like you're having to scan a QR code, or I was in London. You had to tap your card to get into the tube, or else you like would have to really like you'd really have to find a workaround. So like to me, just like the increasing dependence on technology should be at least something that churches like don't just take for granted. That's not an argument necessarily against technology. I mean, I'm talking to you on a laptop that I use for like 6 hours a day for my jobs. But at the same time, I almost wish, like, I'm probably a little bit more of a Luddite on this kind of thing. Like, I was reading a Wendell Berry story this morning, so that probably tells you what my
There you
thoughts on
go.
technology are. But yeah, I almost wish that like churches would just second guess, like, do we need to use technology for this? Like, what is it? What does it do to look at your phone rather than look at a piece of paper or have to ask somebody about something, to actually talk to another human being? Because isn't that the point, or at least one of the points of church, like gatherings at all, is to be together with people and to like have actual interactions? And the more that you digitize things, I think the more it kills that. But again, I understand, especially at a large scale, at a big church, QR codes are a great idea. It's just all, it almost felt like every critique I make in the song, or every like trope that I point out, is like one thing that I could see it being a problem if taken to its extreme. And then as the song kind of builds, as they're all grouped together, it's more hinting at this culture than it is like poking fun or saying that any one of these single things is wrong in every case. I think that's maybe what I want to say.
And I can definitely see that. And your explanation of it makes perfect sense that you're right. And especially in a smaller church, there are a lot of churches that smaller churches that feel like the only way to quote unquote keep up is to try to do the things that the mega church is doing, which of course is the premise of the song. And often what we do is we undercut the things that a smaller, normal sized church actually does best by letting technology interfere, by having technology put up a barrier. In some places, technology is does not give access, technology puts up a barrier. And we need to acknowledge the difference between those two.
Yeah, exactly. Like I've like kind of turned my smartphone into a dumb phone because of a lot of like there are a million reasons to do that. But I also like I recently I played a show with a girl whose entire friend group has flip phones, and it would break my heart if somebody. And in my, for some reason, when I wrote the song, that just the very first line, like, I walked in on Sunday, sat down in a row, I hardly ever do this. I was picturing almost like a homeless man or someone like that who doesn't have access to a phone. And then they're walking in and they're like, okay, here's the way to connect. But there's already, you need something in order to connect rather than it's freely given to you. And something about that culture bothers me. I understand it and I don't think that it's always wrong. But yeah, I just think the less barriers we can put up for like the least common denominator, or yeah, the person who doesn't have, maybe might not have the resource that is necessary, it's probably a good thing to yield to that impulse.
Yeah, it's an important conversation for us to have as well. I love
Yeah.
you then get to the, I don't know that it's a chorus because it doesn't repeat exactly the same way every time, but I'm going to call it the chorus, where it was a normal church trying its best to be a mega church. And then, but all that seemed to do was make it worse. And this is the line that made me pause and go, oh man, it's like he's been in one of my conferences. Because one of my go-tos when I'm talking to small church pastors is, if you try to do everything the mega church does only smaller, you will do what they're doing only badly. Because it doesn't fit the context. And that's exactly that line. You're trying to be a mega church, but it makes it worse. So give me a little context to that. What is it about trying to be a mega church that makes the normal church experience worse, not better?
Yeah, well, I think we've already talked about it in that a church will be the best version of itself when it's like living into the particular gifts of its parishioners. And I think of on like a micro level for like a personal life, I think of that Frederick Buechner quote, something like your vocation is where like the world's deep need and your deep gladness intersect. So like for a church level, I'm like a church's cultural vocation, like what that church is meant to be for its people and in the community is a combination of the needs that it sees and the gifts of its particular parishioners. If it's not able to do that, it's only actually, it's not, it's just going to be bad at its job. It's not like practically speaking, if you're trying to put on a concert, but you have bad musicians, like it's fine to have bad musicians. It's not fine to put on a concert if you have bad musicians. Does
Well,
that make sense?
that's the line in the next verse. It felt just like a concert if the concert wasn't great, which is one of the first places where I laughed because that's such a clever way of phrasing that. But that's often what I experience when I go to smaller churches. They're trying so hard to be better, but they're leaning into areas to match the mega church experience rather than to do well what they can do well.
Yeah, exactly. And every church will have people who can do a lot of things well that would really fit into a church service. It just might not be shredding a guitar solo. It might not be a super, like, what if their pastor is not a very gifted public speaker, but he's still feeling like there's this pressure to speak for an hour every single week?
Which is
Yeah,
another line in the song, too.
yeah. Yeah, I mean, I didn't
Or,
even know that. I'm
yeah.
forgetting exactly what the tropes are, but
Yeah,
yeah.
and that's one of the reasons, for instance, why this podcast is called The Church Lobby, because speaking mostly to small church, normal-sized church leaders, the smaller the church is, the more important church lobby ministry becomes. And so in a lot of smaller churches, everybody's trying to work on the platform performance. But if you're in a church of 50 or so, which again, as we've talked about, 70 is the median size. So a church of 50 or so is a typical size church in America. And if you go outside America, 30 and 40 is a typical size church. In that type of a church, there will be as much or more ministry going on in the lobby as there will be from the platform. And yet we keep pushing ourselves to make the platform experience better and kind of overlooking and not even paying attention to the place where in a smaller, normal-sized church, you're actually going to get more connection. And quite frankly, when you talk to small church people about why they go to a normal-sized church, they won't use the term church lobby, but what they say they like about it are the things that happen in the church lobby more than the things that happen in the main service quite often.
That's interesting. Wow. Yeah, I am not surprised that that is the case. Again, if you're trying to do things that your congregation is not gifted at doing or that they don't even need, it's only going to harm you. And that's not a dig. Like
Right. No.
and I also want to be clear, like there's no reason that you shouldn't like work towards a higher standard of excellence, but I think there's this feeling that churches have to get too big for their britches like right away. A church has a lifespan the same way that a human has a lifespan. So like, you can learn and grow and get better at things. But yeah, feeling it like you have to do church a certain way when you're like a 3-year-old church that doesn't have the volunteers, doesn't have the ministries, like the logistics set in place to do those things. Just why would we do that when we could be
Yeah.
focusing on other things?
Yeah, no, I fully agree. Now a short break to talk about something else. If you like the content you're hearing, here are two things you can do for us. First, forward this podcast to a friend. Second, consider becoming a financial supporter through Patreon, Venmo, or PayPal. Just go to carlvaders.com/support. For as little as $3 a month, you can help us put these resources into the hands of the ministries that need them the most. Our support link is in the show notes. Just to get to help to frame our conversation and for our listeners, my listeners skew older, so a lot of baby boomers, not as many Gen X and a fewer millennials and Gen Z. So how old are you? Because we got to peg you, because that's what boomers
How
do.
old do you think I am?
Well, you're going to be in your oh man, early 30s, late 20s maybe.
Close. I'm 28.
Okay, late early
Just turned
30s, late
28.
20s. Okay, gotcha. So you're that makes you Gen Z, right? If I got my
Yes.
numbers right.
Well,
Okay.
technically, I try not to claim Gen Z. I was born in 98, so I
Okay, you're
if
on the
it
edge.
depends where you draw the cutoff, but I would much rather be a millennial.
Okay.
But
But you're
there's some Gen Z in
so
me.
I'm going to make you speak for both of those groups then.
Oh no.
No, one of the things that drives me crazy is that we want to have a conversation with one person and take everything that they say as representative of an entire subgroup of people, whether it's age or ethnicity or race or whatever or gender. That's got nothing to do with it. But I do want to point that out because our audience is primarily older pastors. We've got a bunch of younger folks as well, but we are an older group than most podcasts probably have anyway, because we're talking about small sized churches. And so a lot of those folks are going to be older congregation members and older churches. But you're speaking not for millennials or Gen Z, but you are speaking from that age group.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. And you are saying what I typically hear when I talk to younger people, boomers, people my age, church leaders my age. We think, a lot of us, that what younger people are looking for is the mega church experience with the haze machines, with the drummer in the cage, with all of the tropes that you have mentioned. But whenever I talk to actual people of your age group, what I find is the opposite. So help us boomers with that, because what we see is a mega church with hazers and with all of the tropes you're talking about, filled with millennials and Gen Z, And then we go to a normal church and it's aging. I'm not going to ask you for an answer to that, but what's your, any thoughts or take on people who come to you with that kind of perception and that reality?
So just to clarify that the perception that like mega churches are populated by younger demographics and older,
That
less.
that's the perception.
I mean, I think there seems to have been a move around the early 2000s, just by my gauge of things as I was kind of like coming up in the evangelical culture. So my dad was a youth pastor, still is a youth pastor actually, at an evangelical free church that operated with a lot of the same characteristics that I describe in the song. And I loved that church. I kind of feel very lucky to have, I don't know, escaped isn't even the right word, to have grown out of that church, to have aged out of that church and moved cities without any church hurt. Like I feel like that church was a gift to me. But I also think that a lot of churches have been planted in the last 20 years with like the goal of reaching young people. Almost, I don't know if this is true, but it feels like a lot of those churches were like designed to reach young people.
I can state categorically that that has been a stated strategy by many of them. So yes, what you're saying is true.
Young people, if you try to do something that you think they think is cool, that's like the ultimate turnoff to a young person. And
Absolutely.
I speak as someone who is no longer like, I'm not a young person. I'm not in college anymore in the same way. I'm between my 20s and my 30s, so becoming a little bit more attentive to how things work in that way. And so if somebody, but if a church like that is like obviously trying to win me over with anything that's not like, I don't know, Jesus won me over, not a certain type of service. He is still winning me over every single day, and not the style of church that I go to. And I think young people especially, I want to give them a lot of credit. They can see through. Are you allowed to curse on this podcast? I won't if
No,
I'm not allowed to.
but I know exactly the word you want. It's in all of our minds, so we're good to go. But they have highly tuned detectors.
And they won't put up with that, just because I think young people are just craving honesty, and like the internet is so starved for honesty. And I believe in the intrinsic goodness or desire for goodness for all, like that all people I think have. I think people know when somebody's trying to sell them something, and young people especially who haven't been jaded and like kind of had their antenna weathered down by a lot of years. Somebody in their 20s just knows when you're trying to sell them something. So in my experience, actually, I don't know if this is the case, but it seems like so many of my friends who grew up, the word I'm going to use is evangelical. I don't know if that's quite true, but like grew up in an evangelical setting. A lot of them are becoming Anglicans and Catholics now, because Anglicans and Catholics don't sell you anything. They ask you to work for your meal. And it's almost like a breath of fresh air to have, grace is a free gift, but life with God takes a lot of work. Work on yourself and work in community, and it's not always convenient, and it's usually pretty hard, and it usually looks like small things, not like big victories and massive light shows and things like that. Like they're like revival, I think, happens in small moments. So when churches tend to make like, big moves for God, their centerpiece, they're like their selling point, I just think that is probably distasteful to a lot of young people. And so I don't know. I guess your older listeners probably, if they have the feeling that these churches that I'm describing in the song are populated by a lot of young people, that might be the case, but I don't think that that is, I think the trend is actually away from that in my experience. I live in Nashville, Tennessee, so it's a city. Obviously, it's going to be different than anything rural. It's kind of weird because it's in the Bible Belt, so like everybody is pretty biblically literate, and everybody's like, and everybody speaks Christianese at least a little bit. Even my non-Christian friends all pretty much grew up in the church or grew up around the church, and they speak that language. So I don't know. Again, what I have to say is not necessarily indicative of like, I don't know if there's any, if you, I don't know if you can ever actually say something about like culture at large, but I do think that at least in my world, it does seem like a lot of people, young people especially, are moving away from flashy church. And that makes me really happy, because I made that move about 4 years ago, and it's been the best thing for me and my faith. And
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that's the perception I get as well, because I think the stereotypical perception of the megachurch is that it's filled with young people. But the demographics and my experience of traveling to a lot of different places to work with a lot of different churches, mostly small, but often the conferences are held at mega churches, and often we're there for Sundays as well. So the demographics and my experience is showing that, in fact, those big churches may have an average age slightly younger than the typical normal church, because a lot of the churches that I go to are churches in crisis. And part of the crisis is that they're aging out and they're not bringing younger people in. So compared to the senior focused church, it's a younger demographic. But the actual typical attender is probably more likely a young baby boomer or a late Gen Xer
Yeah, maybe somebody with a
than.
family and young kids, which also I guess would make sense. I'm thinking about this just now. That would actually make a lot of sense because the bigger a church is, the less it asks of you, at least in my experience, because you can kind of disappear into a bigger crowd. Like it might be asking you to like volunteer one Sunday, but it's not asking you to like really, if there's 70 people in your church, there's nowhere to hide. You're going to know those people. If you're a family with a bunch of kids, you probably don't have the time to be known in like a really deep way and to be in each other's lives and that, because your kids are in school and they're in sports and they're in, music and things like that. So it's a very safe thing to just go to a big church and to disappear if you are a family, because it provides all the things that a family would want and need out of a church without requiring much from like a young family. Anyway, that's just where my mind goes.
And in my experience, healthy pastors of healthy big churches recognize that if I want to be anonymous and I want to be passive, a big church is where I can disappear. The healthy big churches know this, which is why they are constantly trying to push people towards small groups, ministry teams, because they know that that's often missing in the Sunday morning experience. While you have technical excellence, you can't get close to people in that big of a crowd. So they're trying to get them to go there. Whereas in a smaller church, it does demand more access to your life, which is uncomfortable for some people. Simply by the just being in a room of 50 people is very different from being in a room of 500, whether it's for a concert or for church. There are going to be relational boundaries that will be crossed in a church of 50
Yeah, you will be sitting
by
very
the
close to
nature of the size.
somebody. You'll be sitting very close to somebody you don't like actively. Whereas you don't have to do that at a big church. You can sit, like on the other side of a massive auditorium from the person that you don't get along with. But it forces you to be in community with people that you are not like, and that you may not actually like enjoy their company. And that is a
Yeah,
good thing.
it is. Oh no, I fully agree. Being in a room of 1,000, you can be physically as close to people as you are in a room of 50, but you're not next to people, you're in a crowd. It just the crowd has a different feeling. But if you're sitting in a room of 50, you might have two or three seats between you and the next person, but there is an intimacy to the size of the room that changes your perception, and that changes the way you feel, the way you're going to react, the expectations that you have, that is very different. And it's, quite frankly, it's uncomfortable to some people, but for others who are really desiring authenticity and who are really desiring connection that you can't get on your phone, that's, I think, what the draw is. And sounds to me like the draw that you've experienced in the shift of the type of church you were going to.
Yeah, it's interesting you say that. I do think when you go to a big church, I'm thinking of this just now, like the product is different. And the product is, I'm using that word tongue in cheek, like they may or may not be actually trying to sell this thing to you, but I'm not cynical enough to suggest that big churches are just trying to sell you things. I really do believe that everybody's trying. But in a big church, the thing that you get out of a massive service is the same thing that you get out of a concert, which is like singing together with 1,000 people is a great thing to do at some point. Like you should totally do that in your life. You should go to concerts, and you should maybe even go to like a big worship night or something like that. But when that is your like weekly liturgy, singing with 1,000 people is such a transcendent experience that like most of human history had never really had the opportunity to do. Doing that every single week, I don't know what that does for your psychology, but it's got to be like, I don't, we're not meant to have this massive transcendent experience of singing. Yeah, I think the word that I've heard, I might get it wrong. Give me a sec. Oh, collective effervescence. That's the word I'm looking for.
Oh, wow. Okay. No wonder
Yeah.
you had to
So,
pause for that
I knew. I was
one.
like, I know this word somewhere.
Yeah.
So, collective
Collective
effervescence.
effervescence. All
It's
right.
like it's the feeling that you get when you're singing with a big group of people, or like, or performing some sort of art. It's the same thing that happens when you dance in a big group, but something like that. Like it's this weird religious. It's a very religious experience to be like, I'm part of this massive thing. I'm one voice out of a thousand. Is a very different thing than. I'm sitting next to this guy who I don't really like, but there's 50 of us in this room, so I guess I have to sit next to him. So when you go to a church like that, I don't know what it does to your psychology, but I just don't think we were meant to sing with 1,000 people on a weekly basis. And especially when, if you do it too often, it's like any other thing. If you do it too often, it's so obviously manufactured. Well, especially something that's supposed to be transcendent as that. And that's why I feel like we're the tropes that I hear in worship music especially are often just like trying to get bigger and bigger and make sure and like keep people around these massive ideas so that they don't realize that they're just normal people. It's like they're like, oh, we have to talk about revival, and we have to talk about we like we're part of an army. Like those kind of like words get used. Like that's actually probably what it psychologically feels like to sing these songs, because you're singing in a group of 2,000. And then when it transitioned to a smaller church, you're not getting that same experience, but you are doing like the kind of hard work of being forced to live with these 50, 70 people who you see every week. And you're not experiencing this transcendent moment. You're experiencing a lot of these smaller moments. That is probably doing a lot different things to you psychologically. And in my mind, that's more what real life is like. Real life is not like a concert. Real life is a lot more like sitting in rooms with the couple people that you know. So the more that a small group or that a church can kind of feel like normal life and not like this massive transcendent experience. That's not to say we don't need the transcendent experience every once in a while, but it's like I think of it as almost like a drug, where it's like, I might take aspirin when I get a headache, but if I take it every day to stave off my headaches, that's probably not a good thing.
Well, it is a drug, and the drug is called adrenaline. Yeah, and we do. When you have as the normal experience of anything, that kind of adrenaline hit, like any drug, you start getting addicted to it, and then you need a bigger and bigger and bigger hit to maintain the adrenaline. And the come down from that can be very disappointing, so that you've got a fairly high percentage of people coming out of these high adrenaline worship experiences, who, when the hype wears off and they start asking the deeper questions that the text of the Bible passage that the pastor's preaching on, that text demands of them, it starts to feel at odds, I think, with the adrenaline rush.
Yeah, for sure.
And trying to reconcile those two is a challenge. I agree with you. I think that collective effervescence, that adrenaline, that big crowd audience concert experience is awesome and fun, and I love going to it. One of the best nights of my life was U2 at the Rose Bowl. I mean, talk about adrenaline, just an absolute shot straight to the heart. But Bono has talked about how when he gets off tour, he has to stay in a hotel by himself for over a week. His family won't let him in the house until the adrenaline wears off, because otherwise he acts like a
A
word that we
rock
won't use on
star.
this podcast when he gets home to his family. And
That's so
adrenaline will do,
true.
and a constant diet of adrenaline as your primary worship experience isn't going to be healthy in the long term, I don't think.
And I don't think it, like I'm thinking the cynical person would be like, oh, that's just adrenaline, that's not the spirit. I don't think there's anything in the world that's just that thing.
Agree.
Like adrenaline
Agree.
is a God-given gift, and we're meant to experience it in some form at some points. I have a friend, actually one of my very first kind of musical mentors when I was in college. He was a big part of Hillsong in the early days, and then he moved to Nashville, and then he was a part of our church. And he said, he again, this is coming from somebody who was an integral part of Hillsong's like massive rise. He was a musician, so he was part of the band as it was getting huge worldwide. And he was like, Tom, the single most religious experience that I've ever had was a Coldplay concert. It was
Mm.
not in a church building. And that tells me that, well, one, Christ plays in 10,000 places, you know? And I don't think that, like, there's almost this move. The move to make, like, every church service into a concert to me is, like, almost like a fearful move of, like, we have to reclaim adrenaline for God's glory. And I'm just like, no, adrenaline was doing just fine being outside of church. You know, you can go to, I'm a Steelers fan. I was just at the NFL draft 2 weeks ago in Pittsburgh. And being in the Acrisure Stadium as the Steelers were about to make the draft pick, like my heart was racing. I was almost in tears just because it
You're one
was
of them.
such
Oh,
an
okay. You're in tears.
amazing. Yeah. But you know, just being part of a big thing is such a good thing. And I think it just complicates it for a lot of people when they feel like church is the place where it's the only place they get that hit and they get it every single week. Yeah, that just seems like a mistake.
No, I agree with you. Adrenaline and the move of God are not exclusive experiences. They can, and I have many times experienced both in the same room. But the challenge is to not make adrenaline the main thing we're resting on. Make sure the spirit is what we're resting on. And if occasionally the room gets adrenalized, okay, I'll take that too. I'll take the good feelings along with it whenever I can get it. But I'm going to do the hard work to go through the times when the adrenaline isn't there, because that's actually where I get more emotionally and spiritually strong, is when I push through without the adrenaline.
Yeah, for sure.
We could go on in so many different ways, but
Yeah,
all I need to know is Frederick Buechner and Wendell Berry, and you and I are on the same track on a whole bunch of stuff. That right there was all I needed to know.
I'm so glad.
Yeah, they're right there. The bees on my shelf are right there. I can
Oh,
actually touch them and
yeah.
yeah. Hey, thank you so much for your time today, Thomas. I really appreciate it. As we've talked about some critical, and I mean critical in the kind of, movie critic kind of way, as someone who loves the movies and is going to go into it and try to make an accurate assessment of the things that they find. Again, the song is great. We'll put a link to it in the show notes so that people can listen to it. I really love what you've done with it. I love the heart that you come at it with. But before we do go, is there anything that you would say? And if you don't have anything to say, don't feel like you have to commit to it. But is there anything that you would say to the normal church leader who is the primary audience that's listening to this podcast today? Do you have anything that you would want to say to them before we say goodbye for this podcast and head on our way?
I don't know. I'm just a guy and I just go to the church that I like. Maybe what I would say is that don't listen to people like me. Don't listen to people like Carl. Listen to your congregation and what they need. Don't listen to the mega church pastor who's jacked and screaming at you from your iPhone. You know, listen to what Sharon in the front row who just went through a divorce in your church. Like, listen to your people. When you're making the big decisions about like the direction that your church goes, let your people be the guide. That has always meant the most to me. When a pastor knows my name and knows what's going on in my life, and not every pastor can do that, especially at a big church. The bigger the church, the less likely it is that you'll be able to do that. But yeah, personableness without the guise of the internet goes a long way, I think, especially for young people, but I imagine for everybody as well.
For someone who didn't feel like they had much to offer to the pastors, you just gave a great piece of that to it. You said, don't listen to you, don't listen to me, listen to Sharon on the front row. And I couldn't agree more. In fact, just an hour before you and I started this podcast, I was doing a teaching to some other small church pastors, and I quoted Helmut Tillich. Speaking of authors, Helmut Tillich,
Have
an
no
old
idea who that
German,
is.
yeah, I know, yeah, nobody does. Old German theologian who most of his books are like 3 inches thick, but he wrote one very small book, a little exercise for young theologians, and it's only like 80 pages long, and it's designed for people who have just recently graduated from seminary, who come out of seminary thinking they've got it all figured out. And he says, okay, slow down a little bit. And one of the phrases that he uses in the book that I quote all the time is this: we need to, quote, learn to rely on the collective wisdom of God's people. Close quote.
Oh, that's
Sharon on the front
beautiful.
row. He uses the phrase, the washerwoman on the third row, Sharon on the front row, like you just said. So it is exactly that parallel. that, and
Yeah.
he's again, he's talking to people with all the education and with all the ideas and who are ready to just go out and burn it all down. And he's like, slow down. You got people sitting in front of you who have no theological education, but who have a relationship with Jesus and who know their Bible and who are paying attention and who will give you some wisdom if you just slow down and listen to them. So what you said matches that exactly. And it's great to hear that that is the outflow from your heart without having that reading behind you. Again, we've been talking about things that just come organically from our experience, that came organically from your experience, where I had to get it from by reading some German theologian.
Nah, you knew it anyway though. It's the best books, the best theology, the best poetry, the best art. All of that just confirms what we know in our soul to be true, I think.
Well, I don't know that I can conclude this podcast with a better sentence than that. So I'm going to let yours stand as that. Thank you so much, Thomas, for your time today. Thank you for the great song. Thank you for your willingness to talk about it with us today and to help us to confirm some things that we knew already and to push us into some areas that we need to hear about so that we're not trying to be something that we shouldn't be. I really appreciate it. Thanks.
Yeah, thanks for having me, man. It means the world.
Since ending this interview, I've been pondering the portion of our chat in which we discussed some of the criticism that Thomas received after releasing the song, specifically how so many people misunderstood and mischaracterized it as being anti-church or anti-megachurch, even though it's neither of those. Most of us are justifiably concerned about the drop in attendance and the lack of Christian belief among people of all ages in the last generation or so. But I'm convinced that we'll never understand or address the root causes of this drop-off if we can't even hear what's being said in what are quite moderate criticisms in songs like Normal Church. I agree with what Thomas said in our conversation that much of this inability to have civil disagreements is that we often attach a feeling of, thus saith the Lord, to things that are really just expressions of opinion among people in the church. So we need to reserve, thus saith the Lord, to the things God actually did say in his word. And then let's speak and listen to each other with grace and humility, especially when listening to artistic expressions such as songs like Normal Church. Art is not required to give answers. It's often best at asking questions. And if we let them, those questions can often open doors that we might not otherwise see and certainly not be able to walk through. This episode was produced by Veronica Beaver. It was edited by Phil Vaders. Original theme music was written and performed by Jack Wilkins of jackwilkinsmusic.com. The graphic design is by Solomon Joy. And me, I'm Carl Vaders, and I hope to talk with you again in the church lobby.